This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Escape the heat to True North convenience stores and get any size True Oasis fountain drink for 89 cents with True Rewards. Cool that thirst with any of your favorite Pepsi fountain drinks for 89 cents. As a free True Rewards member, pick the perfect size for you. No matter if you're craving a big drink or a small sip, it's just 89 cents. Don't have the True Rewards mobile app? Find it in the Apple or Google Play Store to download and save instantly. True North convenience stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
Can't get enough baseball? Start streaming MLB Network today. Get up to 15 out-of-market games a week live on any device, plus 24/7 access to MLB Network's award-winning shows, including live game look-ins and exclusive player interviews. And hear live radio play-by-play from all 30 clubs with MLB at Bat. Enjoy the home of baseball from virtually anywhere. Plans start as low as $5.99 per month. Sign up now at MLBNetwork.com/stream. Available in the U.S. only. Blackout restriction applies. Visit MLB.com/subscribe for full terms and conditions.
Blake Topmeyer is the senior national college football columnist for the USA Today Sports Network. His podcast is SEC Football Unfiltered. Episodes available each and every week on all major podcast forums. Follow him on Twitter on X at @BTopmeyer. Blake, we've just been discussing, do we maybe need to pump the Lenora Sellers brakes just a hair?
Yeah, it feels like there's almost been an overcorrection. I mean, I thought like in February when you were starting to get kind of your earliest preseason quarterback rankings list, I think you could make the case that Sellers was probably a little bit undervalued. And then, you know, I don't know if it was the Bruce Feldman piece in The Athletic that really highlighted Sellers and pumped him up as like a potential top five draft pick. After the season, I don't know if it was that or what, but there was a shift probably like 6 weeks ago, I would say, where all of a sudden Sellers went from being what I thought was a little bit of an undervalued quarterback below the radar to now all of a sudden it's like the guy's the best quarterback in the SEC, which I don't know. I mean, he finished last year playing great, sure, but this conference is loaded with great quarterbacks this year. And so if Sellers is truly number one, then he's going to have a special season.
Yeah, there's no doubt about that. What about I'm trying to Blake put this properly, because I just spent the last segment, I'm sure people think that I have no doubt and I think that he's gonna be a bust, but Arch Manning being third team, did that surprise you at all, knowing that what he started?
I think he had two starts last year. The Mississippi State game, and then I think he started like the one of the non-con games.
Well, I guess it depends on which way we're looking at this as a surprise, right? I mean, I probably would have put him first team, okay. and some people probably would have left him off, leave him off the ballot entirely. Like that's the thing when you have a player like Arch. I don't think anybody would try to argue that his talents are not apparent, that his ceiling is not incredibly high. So it just depends on how you vote in these things. Like if you're trying to project, where people are going to end on postseason all conference lists, if you're trying to project the season that they may have, I mean, I think you can make compelling arguments for Arch Manning to be a first teamer. If you're someone who does your ballots very much influenced by the season that came before, then he's not going to get any votes from you. And so I think third team probably made the most sense, because when you have so many people voting in this, that's sort of an average of those two voting approaches, right? I'm sure there were people that voted for Arch first team and others that are more reticent toward voting for a guy who has two career starts. And so I think that's how you wind up behind you know, two incumbent starters, Lenora Sellers and Garrett Nussmeier, and wind up on third team. It kind of blends the two voting approaches together, I would say.
I think the thing that, as I've been talking through it with Tim, I think the thing that's actually annoying to me is, I think if I would have read DJ Lagway, first team, all SEC, I think I would have been less annoyed, because I feel like we're treating Lenoris like I actually view Lagway. I'm not. I know he's not there yet, but I do have the highest hopes that he could be the best quarterback in the league, and I just don't see it with Sellers.
Yeah, I think I agree with you that Lagway has the higher ceiling. I think the thing with Sellers is he finished the season playing so well. Like, two of his best games were in November. He threw it all over the yard and torched Missouri in that game. And then he ran wild against Clemson and more of a defensive game, but, you know, he showed off why he's such a dual threat there. And then you compare that to Lagway, you know, who was banged up, missed a game with injury, wasn't really full speed. I mean, I think when you're projecting forward, I think I buy the thought that Lagway might have the higher ceiling. My concern with Lagway is coming off this throwing shoulder situation, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah,
the surgery to his throwing shoulder. That gives me a lot of pause before I would pencil him in, you know, at like first team, second team, all SEC, because it's like, I think he's a great player. He's a big play waiting to happen, but I want to see how healthy that shoulder is.
I told Tim, I was listening to Bud Elliott's Summer School, and I forget, is it Stuart Hall, the 24/7 writer for Florida, was on there, and hearing him break down the entire Lagway situation, which is like, shut him down for spring. It's like, okay, that's fine. I don't really care about spring reps at all, but the way that they've been very, honestly, lack of, like, there's no transparency. It's like the weirdness around the injury made me go, huh, that doesn't sound great.
No, I agree. And that's why I've been pumping the brakes a little bit on Lagway, like in any rankings lists that I do, because, like I said, I mean, as we know, there's so many different strategies for how to do this, but I do try to project forward on the season rather than just be reflective when I do like a quarterback's rankings list. And so I think for the SEC, I may have had Lagway fourth on my list, if memory serves. And that's not totally how I feel about his talents, but I'm pretty concerned, I guess, based on, as you said, kind of the lack of transparency, lack of information. I mean, we see like a 10-second clip,
yeah,
of him throwing with, you know, in some session with his throwing coach. I mean, that's better than nothing, but that doesn't really tell me a ton. I agree with you as far as like being out for spring practice. I don't care about that one bit. That is irrelevant to me. It doesn't matter. It's more that he was, if he just would have been traveling the world,
yeah,
and, you know, climbing Everest in this spring practice, I don't care. The fact that he was out with an injury, that's what,
yes,
concerns me. So yeah, I had Lagway fourth in my pecking order of SEC quarterbacks. But if I'm getting 100% healthy DJ Lagway, which we really didn't see much of last season, then I think I'd have him higher than fourth.
I guess maybe prior to the Georgia game, you could say he was healthy-ish, but from that point forward, right, we didn't see him.
Right. Yeah, and he was so raw at that point.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, yeah, when we saw him healthy, he was the definition of inexperienced, right? And so then,
yes,
as the season unfolds, he gets more experienced, but then he finishes the year not being healthy.
Correct. And
so,
not being able to move was
right,
was a big problem. I was also making this point to Tim. I think if I remove Calzada, Joey Aguilar, Blake Shapen, and George, I had one more. I have trouble. There's one other guy. Taylen Green. It's not super likely that these are not all the same, but I can kind of envision a scenario where almost every other quarterback winds up being the SEC, the first team all SEC quarterback. Again, it scales on massive, you know, there's a big gap in there,
But I can envision a scenario where just about the rest of them wind up being the first team All-SEC quarterback.
Yeah, it's certainly like probably, I would put it at like seven or eight guys that probably have an even more realistic chance.
Yeah.
I mean, I think you're leaving some long shots in there. Bo Prabula at Missouri, who we've talked about before.
Marcel Reed's the same thing. Like, I don't love him, but Bud Elliott's blue chip ratio came out, and they were fourth. And if you tell me the number one, if A&M winds up being the number one team, and again, I'm not banking on it, but it is possible, and Reed's out there running and throwing around, I can see where he's going to get some support.
Right, and Jackson Arnold, you know, coming off of a really rough season, but then you look at Auburn's
receivers. He could have just massive numbers.
Yeah, it's like Auburn either has the number one or number two best group of receivers in a conference, depending on how much you like LSU's receivers, I think. So, yeah, he could be – Jackson Arnold could be a mid-tier SEC quarterback and end up with the best numbers in the conference because of who he's got in his supporting cast. So, yeah, I think that's right. And I think it speaks to – I think your larger point may be, like, there's not a lot of bad quarterbacks starting in this league anymore.
I think there are two.
I think there's at least one. I don't know what Aguilar is. I don't know if you're putting him in that mix. I really don't know what he is. I will admit I didn't watch a ton of App State football.
He got his coach fired.
Now,
he did also have – last year was a significantly worse year for him than the year prior, but he did get his coach at App State fired.
Yeah, it's not a great situation. I think, you know, Josh Heupel can help him because I think Josh is a great quarterback developer, but – yeah, anybody trying to polish Tennessee's situation as to being a good outcome from swapping Nico to Joey Aguilar, like they are Vols underpants. So that was a massive net loss for Tennessee. So yeah, I mean, I think Aguilar and Zach Calzada sit at the bottom of the conference,
and maybe Shaban too.
Coming off injury,
yeah,
don't know, right? I mean, I thought I've seen him look good at times in his career, but you know, we haven't seen him in live fire in what, 10 months now. So we'll see. And also it's so unfair to him because
yeah,
he doesn't have the same type of weapons as some of these other guys. Cause that is interesting. Cause it's like that guy's been around college football for an eternity. Now he's a seventh year senior with his fourth program. And like, that's the fun factoid is that the SEC's worst quarterback or either 15 or 16, depending on how you're doing your list, owns an upset victory against Nick Saban's Alabama. Right? Yeah, Calzada way back at Texas A&M, Spurs an upset of Alabama in 2021. And actually put up some great numbers.
Yeah, led a game-winning drive, too.
Yeah, yeah. And then it's the FCS, but he's coming off some great numbers there at Kentucky. But, I mean, I think, you know, he's fairly toward the bottom of the conference. But, yeah, I mean, other than that, this isn't the way the league used to be. The SEC's always had great talent. We know that. Line of scrimmage league, speed, et cetera, et cetera. But it was not
It was the league of game managers.
Yeah, it was not the home of the nation's best quarterbacks. Now it is. Doesn't mean there aren't good quarterbacks in other conferences. There are, particularly in the Big 12. And Cade Klubnik, you know, is a top five quarterback any way you slice it, I think, from Clemson. But in terms of the top to bottom best collection of quarterback talent, the SEC, I think, is running away with it this year.
Blake Topmeyer joining us here. Blake, when you look at the preseason poll that comes out, is there a team towards the bottom that you think is getting overlooked a bit?
Missouri at 12. And if you would have asked me to predict where Missouri would be, I would have said exactly here. I think there's still a very provincial nature of voting in the SEC's preseason media poll. I think there's a lot of media members that think Missouri, they're not any good. What are they doing in this conference? And it's like, actually, Missouri's got 21 wins in the last two seasons, and they have the most favorable schedule draw in the conference. So I could have predicted they would have been 12th, but to see them at 12, I think they are being vastly misjudged there, because I think, and just in terms of team, I think Missouri has better than the 12th best team in this conference. But also, again, depends on your voting strategy. But when I vote in these types of things, they're not a power rankings for me. They are a projection on the predicted order of finish, which is what it's called.
Yeah.
And so to do that, I don't think you can fairly complete that exercise
without looking at a team's schedule. And Missouri drew either the number one or number two most favorable schedule in the conference. I mean, Missouri could be pretty average this year and go 4-4 in the league. And if you go 4-4 in the league, I don't think you're finishing 12th in the standing. So that to me is probably the most underrated team. The other one I would put into that mix, Tennessee at 9. I mean, it's hard to figure because Tennessee's situation is probably no better than the ninth best situation. Actually, Tennessee's at 10, and Missouri. Anyway, Tennessee's at 9 or 10, somewhere in that range.
They're in between A&M and Oklahoma.
Yeah, and I think if you're looking at their situation roster wise, quarterback wise, sure. But again, I have to look at the schedule, and I mean Tennessee starts the season well on its way to four conference victories because it drew the four weakest teams in the conference in Arkansas, Vanderbilt, Kentucky, and Mississippi State. So, yeah, Tennessee's well on its way to no worse than a 4-4 record in the SEC unless it blows one of those four games. So I could see Tennessee finishing higher than this based on their schedule draw. And like I said, Missouri at 12 is too low.
I think I agree with how – when I used to fill out the ballot, I did it the same way you did. I'm trying to predict what I think is going to happen. I'm not going to bat 1,000. No one is. But it's one of those things where I do think I would have had Texas 1, but for the reasons we were laying out that a lot of the people that attend SEC Media Days still have the, you know, this ain't the Big 12 attitude.
Mm-hmm.
It did surprise me a little bit to see Texas as the preseason favorite.
Well, yeah, and I think because they're fresh off the college football playoff semifinal appearance, and also the guy with the last name of Manning on the jersey, like that's an SEC name.
Yeah,
right?
No, that's what I was telling Tim. I go, you don't understand, man. There's a Manning in the SEC. It's been a while. There's going to be some giddiness.
Yeah, as provincial as the voting is, that is not being discounted just because Texas is the SEC newcomer. You throw a Manning in the quarterback position, and those SEC long-timers, the guys that have had a ballot for 67 years, they're voting Texas number one.
Did anything else surprise you?
I don't think so. I thought, you know, the top end would be some ordering of Texas and Georgia at 1-2. Not terribly surprised it's Texas at 1. I think the quarterback situation explains that.
Yeah.
I thought Alabama, LSU would be some ordering of 3-4. Here we have it, Alabama 3, LSU 4. Don't have a huge argument with that. I think LSU's schedule maybe is a little tougher than Bama's.
And,
so I can buy
and honestly,
that.
For me, it's just like Bama gets them at home.
Yeah, that's where the break is for me. I think maybe the – maybe the one that grabs my attention is the gap between Florida and Oklahoma. Florida is 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, and Oklahoma is 10th. And I think if you're looking at two teams that can be an upgrade and be playoff contenders this year that were not last year from the SEC, I think Florida and Oklahoma are the tip of the spear of that conversation. They were not playoff contenders last year. Florida finished hot, but they were out of the playoff hunt by that point. Oklahoma was miserable last season. But I think they are two teams that could be contenders this year, or because they have the two toughest schedules in the country, not just the conference. I think Florida and Oklahoma have the nation's two toughest schedules. They could go, you know, 2-6. In the league. Oklahoma doesn't have one layup on the draw, and Florida's schedule is pretty tough too. And so I'm not terribly surprised to see Oklahoma down there at 10th, because that tells me voters did peek at their schedule, A. B, they were also influenced by Oklahoma's record from last season.
Yeah.
But seeing Florida then all the way up at 6, that doesn't follow the same strategy then, because I think Florida and Oklahoma's schedules are comparable. And yet Florida got the love at 6, Oklahoma down at 10. That tells me voters were probably pretty influenced by Florida's hot finish, whereas Oklahoma the upset against Alabama aside, they limped to the finish. But this is not the same Oklahoma team. I mean, you might as well not even look at last season when evaluating Oklahoma. Look at the schedule, sure.
Yeah.
And hold them factor. I can see that being a factor in them being 10th, but I actually think that 10th place vote for Oklahoma is probably more based on the way they played last season, which is not really relevant anymore.
Tim, this was the other thing, and maybe I'll let Blake set it. What would you set the over-under of number of teams in the league that will finish with 6 wins or more in league play? In league play, so 6-2 or better.
Ooh.
Because we had 3 last year, right?
Yeah, I think I'd set the over-under 3.5.
Doesn't it feel like this? Like, it feels like one of these weird years where, like, it feels like Texas, Georgia, and Alabama could maybe only lose to each other. And then I just wonder if it's a bunch of, like, mush in between 5 and 3 and 4 and 4 after that.
Well,
you can't, everybody can't win.
See that up and down the conference, I see that. Like, so I didn't fill out a ballot for this conference exercise, but I did for our company's predicted order of finish. And I had a much easier time, I thought, filling out 1 through 4. Alabama versus LSU was tough and what have you. But 1 through 4 didn't give me too much trouble, and neither did 13 through 16. I knew who I thought were the 4 weakest teams, and then it was just ordering them. But then you're left with this glob of 8 teams, and the team that I put 5th on my ballot, I could see finishing 12th. The team I put 12th, I could see finishing 5th, and in anywhere in between. Like, that mess of 8 teams in the middle, they're all pretty good teams. I don't think any of them, stink. I think if they were in the Big 12, they'd be in the race.
Easy, you're sounding like Lane now.
Easy. Yeah, now I'm sounding like Greg Sankey, right? But I think that is the SEC's argument, right?
Yeah, this, no, I,
all
Todd,
this
totally,
propaganda
yes.
Propaganda campaign about how it's the toughest league, et cetera. It is that glob of 8 teams in the middle. It's like all those teams are pretty good, but somebody's got to lose, and they all play each other quite a bit in that middle mess. And so that is sort of the difficulty in this ranking exercise. I found it so much easier to do these rankings exercises when the conference was at 14 teams. I mean, forget about 12 teams. Even when it was at 14 teams and you had it split into 2 divisions.
I was going to say, I kind of miss divisions.
Yeah, that was much easier to project things. It sure made – there's some pros and cons to divisions going away, but it sure made the summer homework exercises a lot easier when we had divisions. Figuring out who should be 5th and who should be 12th in the SEC, that's one of the most difficult things I'll do during the summer, which tells you how easy this life of a sports writer can be in the off season.
You know, it's funny because I felt like all throughout the offseason when we talked to Blake, I was the one trying to steer it into, hey, let's actually talk football. And now we're all talking football, and I have a question about the playoff. Because Dan Wetzel wrote a column today for ESPN essentially saying, if the Big Ten and SEC are not going to come to an agreement, crazy idea, why don't we just keep it at 12? And it's kind of funny when we think back to this idiotic discussion of expanding the NCAA basketball tournament when no one wants it. And how many people out there really want this to get expanded to 16? I think 12 is great. But Blake, where are we on this right now? And could Wetzel's column have some validity to it, where if the Big Ten and SEC don't see eye to eye on auto bids and whatnot, could it just stay at 12 for a little while?
Well, I think it does have validity to it because, I mean, we heard from Greg Sankey point blank on Monday that if the SEC does not get one of its preferred expansion plans, we know the SEC is against the Big Ten plan. We've talked about how that changed. They're now against the Big Ten plan. Each side has dug in its heels. And Greg Sankey, and I'm paraphrasing, but he said, if the SEC doesn't get one of its preferred expansion plans, then it's staying at 12. And I don't see the SEC, I put it at
good,
a non-zero chance that they'll change their mind and throw their weight behind the Big Ten plan, but it sure didn't sound like it from the boss man this week. It sounded like they're not going back to that Big Ten plan. And the Big Ten sure makes it seem like they're not heading in the direction of the 5 plus 11 plan unless the SEC adds a ninth conference game. And I don't think the SEC at this point, if I had to call the election, it's not decided yet, I don't think the SEC is going to add that ninth conference game. So if everybody sticks to their battle lines, no decision. We've heard this from Rich Clark from the CFP, the executive director. Rich Clark says that the Big Ten and the SEC have to agree to on a format to expand the playoff. But he's also said no decision is a decision.
Yeah.
So if you can't decide on how to expand, that in itself becomes the collective decision. You can't decide on how to expand, so you persist with the current model. And so, I mean, if you were handicapping odds, if you can bet on everything now, right? So why not this? If you were handicapping odds of which playoff format is going to be in place for 2026 and beyond, I would now probably give the current format better odds than the Big Ten's plan. Because for all the momentum that the Big Ten seemed to have behind its plan like 4 or 5 months ago, that's gone now. And unless the SEC retreats toward that plan, which given all public indications, they're not going to, that plan is not going to move forward. And so then, as Sankey laid out, there's really only two paths forward. Either the Big Ten acquiesces to one of these expanded playoff plans like the 5+11 that the SEC is behind, or no decision to no agreement to expand becomes a decision by default to stay at 12.
Blake, we really appreciate it, buddy. Have a great weekend.
Thanks, guys.
That is Blake Topmeyer, senior national college football columnist for the USA Today Sports Network.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Escape the heat to True North convenience stores and get any size True Oasis fountain drink for 89 cents with True Rewards. Cool that thirst with any of your favorite Pepsi fountain drinks for 89 cents. As a free True Rewards member, pick the perfect size for you. No matter if you're craving a big drink or a small sip, it's just 89 cents. Don't have the True Rewards mobile app? Find it in the Apple or Google Play Store to download and save instantly. True North convenience stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
It's time for MLB Pitch, Hit, and Run, the official youth skills competition of Major League Baseball. Host a local event and give kids in your community a chance to compete in the Pitch, Hit, and Run finals at the 2024 MLB World Series. Sign up for free at pitchhitrun.com.
Hate doing cardio? Try brushing and flossing your teeth. I'm not talking about building up a sweat. I'm talking about building a healthier mouth for a healthier heart for a healthier you. Smile Generation trusted dentists look at your care through the lens of the mouth-body connection, because what happens in the mouth plays a critical role for the rest of your body. To find a dentist near you committed to treating all of you, visit smilegeneration.com/confidence today and live longer, healthier, and happier with confidence unleashed.
Some people follow the rules, but where's the fun in that? I'm Soraya, and this is Rule Breakers, the podcast where we celebrate the rebels, the misfits, and the ones who make their own way. Every week, I sit down with the biggest rule breakers in sports, entertainment, and beyond to talk about the wildest moments, toughest lessons, and why breaking the rules might just be the key to success. Follow and listen to Rule Breakers with Soraya, an Odyssey podcast, available now for free on the Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.